You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
During the winter months next year, sports fans may feel a sense of abandonment because both the National Football League and the National Basketball Association are facing potential work stoppages at the end of their current seasons. It's because the collective bargaining agreements for both leagues are about to expire, and the two sides, the owners and the players, cannot seem to be able to reach agreements. Chris Mannix, a staff writer at Sports Illustrated, and Mark Moravec, the magazine's assistant managing editor, have been following the negotiations and join me now to fill us in on their progress. Chris and Mark, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Mark, when did we first start seeing work stoppages or lockouts in professional sports?
They really started to be sort of notable in the 80s. There was a strike with the NFL in 1982. There was another strike in 1987. Baseball had an awful strike in 1994. Basically, the World Series was canceled. The NHL lost an entire season recently. It really came to a head in the 80s and has been a blemish on sports for a while.
Could we say it's a direct result of free agency?
I think that's part of it. I think there's just so much money now involved. That's the main thing with television rights fees and player salaries, that the stakes are just so much higher now slicing up the pie, the multi-billion dollars of revenue is the players find it's worth it and the owners find it's worth it.
Chris, the players also all formed unions. They didn't have them in the old days of these sports. Collective bargaining agreements are common in business and used to regulate working conditions. Is that the function of the CBAs for sports leagues as well?
I'm sorry, the quote?
A CBA, a collective bargaining agreement. What basically are they? When my union signs a contract with WNYC, there are certain things that we work out on top of the salaries. The same sort of thing happening here?
Yeah, I mean, these collective bargaining agreements have gotten more and more complex, as Mark pointed out, with the incredible amount of money that's being infused in with TV and with other forms of revenue, and because they're so complex, and in addition to what he was saying. You know, one of the more things that have complicated it over the last couple of years has been the recession. I mean, the down economy has affected owners in every sport. The NBA, there's as many as 15 owners that have lost money this season or are going to lose money this season.
Are they really losing money?
They're really losing money.
Are some doing so well and others losing
money? A lot of it has to do with the market. The big market teams, LA, New York, Boston, they still draw healthy crowds. They still sell a lot of merchandise because of the star players they have. But, smaller markets, places like Memphis or even some of the markets in Texas, they lose a little bit of money, upwards of $10 million. And overall as a league, the commissioner has come out and said that, this season NBA teams will lose $350 million. I mean, that's an enormous number that the NBA is determined to fix.
And the commissioner, David Stern, also, a player like LeBron James have suggested that having fewer teams in the NBA might be beneficial for the league.
It probably would be.
But I could see where the union wouldn't like that.
Yeah, that cost them jobs. I mean, that's why I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, you rarely have contraction in any sport, and especially I don't think the NBA, where, I would highly doubt that would be an option on the table. But the point is well made. They would be better off probably financially if you eliminated, let's say a team in Minnesota or Memphis. Teams are just really struggling right now and just can't seem to, tread water in this league.
Well, the NBA owners want the players to take pay cuts of $700 to $800 million. Would that be across the board or only in those towns that are having problems?
It would be entirely across the board. They want to reduce these maximum salaries. I mean, if you break it all down, there are two things the NBA wants to get done. I mean, a lot of stuff's out there, but there are two main things the NBA wants to get done. They want to reduce the player's share of the revenue from 57%, which is what it's currently at, down to around 50, make it an even split. I mean, they'd like to get the larger share, but they'll settle for right around 50. The other thing they want to do, which is something the NFL already has, they want to eliminate guaranteed contracts. I mean, they are getting tired of seeing guys make $15, $20 million in the last year of a deal and do nothing to earn it. I mean, that has come
because across. Because they're injured or because they're not
because
playing
they're not, anymore? Because they're not effective anymore. I mean, the NBA, I mean, part of it's their own doing. They're giving out these contracts, but, you know, you're seeing guys like Jermaine O'Neal last year and Stephon Marbury here in New York. You know, guys that did not earn the $22 million that they were making. And the NBA wants to – they would ideally like to make all those contracts non-guaranteed, but they'll settle at this stage for partially guaranteed contracts. So that's a big big sticking point for the league and the union to negotiate.
Well, Mark, in football, I would think that this is even a bigger problem because in basketball you only have a limited number of players on teams, and they play a lot of games, so you would think there would actually be more money to spread around. But football teams are huge, and they only play a limited number of games.
The money is so much bigger in the NFL than it is in the NBA.
Because of television?
Because of television contracts. The television networks pay $4 billion a year for the rights to broadcast the NFL. And this is one of the sticking points in this lockout is that the NFL is guaranteed of getting that $4 billion even if there's no season next year.
Well, the last time we had something like this, they brought in replacement players. I'm sure that the locked-out players didn't think of them as replacement players. They thought of them the way members of any union would think of them. They were scabs.
They were scabs in the eyes of the union, and that was such a travesty that I think there's no chance that will happen next year. It was just such an embarrassment to the league.
But didn't some of those replacement players stick afterward? They may have had problems in the locker room, but it turned out that there are some pretty good players out there who haven't been able to make teams, but who probably should have.
It did give a chance to a few players, and you know, Sean Payton, the coach of the Super Bowl champion Saints, was a replacement player. So there were a few careers were made, but overall, it's just looked at as a huge black mark on the league.
But yeah, you're saying it won't happen again this time?
No.
So what would happen? They'd just be throwing away millions and millions of dollars.
Well, this is the issue is that there's an arbitration going on right now as to whether this agreement with the television networks for the $4 billion for next season is a legitimate deal. The players are now arguing that it isn't, and the owners are sitting back and saying, "Well, there's no, you know, they're happy to collect their money and not pay the salaries to the players, so they're not going to lose that much money. It's really on the players."
But would the televisions, would ESPN and CBS, NBC, ABC, Fox, et cetera, still have to give them money even if there were no games?
That is the agreement. And Boy. The league is looking at this as a sort of an advance on their contracts that they will have to pay back. But they will have the money, and it will be split up among the 32 owners.
Yeah, I wonder if we can work that out in public radio.
It's different. I mean, I think Mark would agree that, you know, the NFL, the problems they have are not even close to the problems that the NBA has. I mean, if you're talking about it, which sport is more likely to lose a season or part of a season, it's absolutely the NBA because, you know, if the NBA is forced to have a work stoppage, if they're, you know, come July 1st, if they're forced to lock out the players, every indication that I've gotten is that they're going to go for the jugular. You know, they are going to be willing to forfeit the entire season just to implement the rules they want in place. I mean, they are, you know, the second they start losing games, and regardless of the money they're going to lose, they don't have the TV contract, they don't have that deal the NFL has, but regardless of what money they're going to lose, they firmly believe that there are some owners out there that will lose, or a lot of owners out there, that will lose less money with a lockout than they would playing a current season under the current agreement.
My guests are both from Sports Illustrated, Chris Mannix, who's a staff writer at the magazine, Mark Moravec, who is assistant managing editor of Sports Illustrated. The Knicks lost to the Spurs in the NBA Finals in the lockout shortened 1998-1999 season. Is the expiring CBA that the NBA is working under the one that was decided on then?
It was the one that was decided after that, yes.
Mm. And what had caused that lockout?
Similar situation, similar circumstances. I mean, the big issue during that time, if my memory serves, was the issue of rookie contracts. And that's actually a situation the NFL is dealing with right now where, you know, rookies in this day in the NFL are getting exorbitant amounts of money after never playing it down. before even playing it down. In the NBA, it was a similar situation. If you remember, you know, in the mid-90s, guys like Glenn Robinson, you know, Jason Kidd, Grant Hill, these guys got monster contracts before ever playing, and the NBA wanted to, you know, put a cap on that. They wanted to, you know, to make sure there was a limited amount of money guys could make and it's certain control players had over them, or they had over the players over the years, and they accomplished that. And I think that's a, you know, the fact they were able to do that, I think that bodes well for them this time around.
Well, Jason Kidd, the other players you mentioned, all went on to have very fine careers. But the fact of the matter is, if you're the number one draft choice, you're locked into a certain amount of guaranteed money. If you're number two, a little less. And it doesn't matter if you ever have a career or not.
Right. Like the Oakland Raiders a couple of years ago drafted Jamarcus Russell, number one pick. $38 million, I think, was his guarantee, and he is not with the team anymore. He's not playing football. He's terrible.
Well, do the unions really want to keep that in place? After all, I would think most of the players who are in the union have been in the game for a while, and they would like the money to be spread around.
In the NFL, I think that is one of the points that if there's a point of agreement between the owners and the players, it's over these rookie contracts. I think that will be an issue that is that will be settled. The players have actually proposed a shorter contract span and for rookies, 3-year contract. And
but the players would like longer contracts for veterans.
There has to be a give and take. I mean, you know, there has just like there was in the NBA, where you give up, you know, these monster rookie contracts, but you also have to, you know, present the opportunity for players to make more money, which is now the problem we're at right now, because now owners in the NBA are thinking or are saying that these guys make way too much money. I mean, these guys are, you know, making $22 million per year. We can't afford to keep paying that in these times. So, you know, if I would assume that in the NFL, if, you know, if they're going to give up those rookie deals, they're going to get something on the back end.
Well, what would happen with a shorter original rookie contract is there would be a more chances for free agency. You'd get maybe two, you get maybe three shots at free agency as opposed to two over the course of maybe a 10-year career.
But there's also the other end of those contracts, as we saw with the Derek Jeter negotiations with the Yankees. Here's a player who is already kind of on the back end of an incredible career, and I think he felt legitimately that he should have that should have been respected by the team, and he should have been rewarded. The Yankees are saying, well, you know, we're not sure he's going to produce the way he did in the past, and we don't want to pay him as much.
Well, you know, the NFL is a heartless sort of organization.
You're more likely to be hurt in the NFL.
You're more likely to be hurt. And also there's, you know, without guaranteed contracts, there's a little sentiment for older players. They will just get cut by a team, you know, and the team will move on. You don't get a lot of Derek Jeter situations. You know, you see a lot of players moving around at the end of their careers. Brett Favre, Donovan McNabb, Jason Taylor, these guys will just go and look for a final contract with another team.
And Derek Jeter was unique in the regard that, you know, the Yankees play with Monopoly money. I mean, they're, you know, out there, and they can afford to drop, you know, $20 million on Derek Jeter and not hurt their bottom line. I think there, even in baseball, there aren't too many examples besides that where players get that golden parachute on the way out.
Well, the same sort of thing applies in baseball. All of these games have salary caps or something that's the equivalent of that. The Yankees are just willing to pay big fines to keep their payroll high.
Well, that's part of the problem, too, is that, yes, there are quote-unquote salary caps, but there are about a million different ways to drive a U-Haul through those salary caps, you know, the loopholes there. And that's a big problem, at least in the NBA. I mean, the NBA has what they call a luxury tax on the, you know, if you go over the salary cap, it's a dollar-for-dollar tax that teams will pay on that. Well, that's fine, but teams like New York and Boston and L.A., they don't care about paying that tax. So one of the things the NBA has proposed is to implement a super tax, which is, you know, essentially taking that tax and doubling it or tripling it just to, you know, completely, you know, de-incentivize teams from going out there and going over that tax. Because as it currently stands, there are far too many teams in the league that simply don't care about paying that extra money.
That would prevent the Miami Heat from putting together an all-star team.
Well, Miami was different in the sense that their payroll isn't exactly that high. I mean, they cleared a ton of cap space last year. They got rid of a bunch of guys, and they were okay. Like, the situation the NBA is more looking at. As the Knicks a couple of years ago, their payroll was like $120 million.
And they were losing.
And they were losing, yeah, left and right. But their payroll was ridiculous, and there was technically a salary cap. I mean, the NBA has long – several people in the NBA would like to go for a hard salary cap where you have, say, it's $50 million, and you simply can't go over that. That's probably not going to fly with the Players Association. But implementing a super tax or doing something else to de-incentivize teams – from going out there and doing that, I think that's a more likely scenario.
My guests are Chris Mannix and Mark Mravich of Sports Illustrated. We're talking about the negotiations. This is really a labor issue as much as it's a sports issue, maybe even more of a labor issue than anything else. Unions right now are suffering around the country. We'll talk a bit about whether some of these unions might be dissolved because that's also been discussed after we take a little break. We're back with Mark Mravich, Sports Illustrated Assistant Managing Editor, and Chris Mannix, who's a staff writer at that magazine. And we're talking about current labor negotiations. And I wonder, how long have the negotiations been going on? Did they begin at the beginning of the seasons?
Well, in the NFL, there's been a lot of back and forth. There have been some negotiations, but for the most part, it's been a lot of posturing right now.
So they're not really sitting down.
They are not sitting
seriously
down.
Negotiating.
They're not sitting down and negotiating. There was the Players Association polled the players in September about decertifying the union. That was sort of a first step toward a reaction to a possible lockout. And there's been some back and forth, and some owners have said we're close to an agreement, and other owners have said, you know, we're going to lose a season and be happy to do so.
What would be gained by decertifying the union?
Well, this is, you know, you need a lot of lawyers and accountants to figure out all of this stuff. But the year begins on March 4th. That's when the contract expires on March 3rd. And if the owners would lock out the players would decertify, and then they can file a lawsuit against the league for antitrust. But there's also a lot of risks involved in decertifying. So that would be one potential response.
Yeah, the NBA they've explored the similar. They're not as far along as the NFL as far as they haven't taken votes on too many teams, but they've also explored it for the same reasons, you know, so they can, you know, go to court and sue to keep the season going next year under the same current conditions.
Well, if the teams are losing money, can you sue people to continue paying you very high salaries?
Again, a topic for more lawyers than we're clear on, but you know they can. They believe they can. They think they can accomplish this. And just to go back to where these negotiations are as far as the NBA goes, you know, the All-Star game in February is going to be kind of a drop-dead date. That's when the union bosses are going to be in Los Angeles. That's when all the NBA representatives will be in Los Angeles. All the key players in the league will be in Los Angeles. They're going to have several meetings over that All-Star weekend. And I spoke with Billy Hunter, who's the head of the union, a few weeks ago. And what he said was that if we don't make significant progress there or come to some kind of working framework there, that, you know, the rest of the season, what he called it, was going to be a slow march to a lockout. That's a little frightening because, you know, we're still a good 5 months away from any decisions being made. But, you know, they really believe that if nothing is accomplished at this All-Star weekend, then, that's the ball game right there.
Well, the NFL owners are guaranteed their money from television, whether there's a lockout or not. What happens to the owners of the basketball player?
Well, they don't have the kind of sweetheart deal.
They're just going to be shooting themselves in the foot.
Well, they are, but you know, as I said before, the NBA, you know, believes that they'll lose less money by keeping, by taking the season off. They really believe their owners that would lose less in the current system, and this is the problem too, because there's a fundamental difference in what the union thinks is going on with the league and what the league says is going on. The NBA's claim, they've opened their books to the union. They said, look, this is what's going on. We're going to lose this year between $350 and $400 million. They said, this is what our books say. The union's taken a look at those same books and said, no. We see growth in the 3 to 5% range, which is roughly $100 million. So when you have both sides looking at the same numbers and the same fact sheets saying totally different things, that to me is the greatest example of why this is in the situation that it is.
Of course, both can be right. It depends on how you read the statistics.
It depends. But somebody's got to be more right, I think. And somebody, you know, you can't have that big a gap. If we're talking 25 million each way, fine, but not that big a gap.
Well, the players can also be shooting themselves in the foot because if some teams are forced to go out of business, they're just going to be losing their jobs.
Oh, the players?
At least the marginal players.
The players, not even that. And you can even go as high as the elite players. I mean, look at in the NBA the last couple of years. I mean, Antoine Walker played for the Celtics for a number of years, made over $100 million in his career. He's broke. He's playing in the NBA Development League for $13,000 a year. Allen Iverson.
Yeah, but he also is a mess up.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, have blown through all their money. Allen Iverson made over $100 million. He's playing over in Turkey for $2 million a year. He's broke. I think there's a lot of guys that once they start missing those paychecks are going to be in some real serious financial trouble. Now, the union says they have a $175 million war chest to help, quote, players in need. Now, number one, I'd like to see a player in need, you know, sell a few Bentleys and you're better off than I am. But number two, $175 million, as gaudy a number as that seems to be, that's not going to go very far when you're talking about 300, 400 players to split the pie up amongst in the NBA.
What does this mean just for this season, for example? There's a lot of trade talk constantly. Would anybody be willing to make a commitment to Carmelo and Anthony?
If you mentioned the golden name right there. I mean, the labor agreement has absolutely impacted this Carmelo Anthony trade talk because, you know, Carmelo wants the $65 million extension Denver offered him in the offseason. He just doesn't want it from Denver. He wants it with New York, maybe New Jersey, maybe a couple other teams. He was born in Brooklyn, grew up in Baltimore. He wants a change, right? No matter what. He wants to make a move. Now, if he waits till the offseason and signs with the Knicks when he's a free agent, he can do that. He has every right. But he's assuming, like we all are, that he's going to make considerably less money under the next collective bargaining agreement than he would in this one, which is why he is holding these teams hostage and saying, you know, I want this $65 million deal. You have to put together a package to come and get me. So it's definitely been this lockout has significantly impacted that trade talk.
And is it in Denver's best interest to keep him?
Well, no, because, you know, at this stage, they know he's not going to resign there for the long term. And what they have to do is find a way to maximize the value they get in return, which is why they're talking to teams about young players, about draft picks. Clearly, even though Denver is a playoff team right now, a borderline elite team right now, if they trade Carmelo Anthony, they become a fringe team. And they know they have to get as much young talent in return and simply cannot let Carmelo just walk away in the offseason.
You cannot be a rebuilding team when you're facing a lockout next season.
I'm not sure.
And still hope to draw fans at the kinds of ticket prices that you're charging.
No, certainly not. Which is why one of the things that I think is that I really believe, you know, if you're going to take the owner's side in this, if you're going to say the owners are right, you know, they need to cut back on player salaries. They need to cut back on the spending. You know, we want to, you know, do all that. There also needs to be a trickle-down effect. I mean, the fans need to be paying lower ticket prices. I mean, I've been to Knicks games and talked to fans who, you know, a family who brings a father who brings his family of four in there, and he's paying like $2,000, you know, for those seats and with parking and all that stuff. I mean, if the owners get what they want, they cannot these talks aren't just about an owner making more money. It has to be a trickle-down effect where the fans get a better experience for a cheaper cost.
I remember the good old days when I was in high school and I could take my Geo card to Madison Square Garden and get in the worst seats for 50 cents.
It's funny, in the NFL,
I don't know what you can get for 50 cents over there now.
In the NFL,
well, the equivalent would be $5 or something, $10, wouldn't it? And you build fans, but that's a whole other
matter. I don't know what you can get for $5 over there. I mean, even the upper bowl seats there, you're talking $100, $150 for nosebleeds.
Mark,
attendance is really not even an issue with the NFL because the television money is so huge. They, you know, they fill the stadiums anyway, but you know, the Jets had a bit of a problem selling these seat licenses, but the real issue is the television money and the television ratings, which have just been skyrocketing in the NFL. I mean, mind-boggling. 30 million people watched the Jets-Colts playoff game. It's the highest-rated Saturday night ever for NBC.
And the game with the Patriots will probably be even draw more viewers.
It will. Eight of the top 10 television programs last year were NFL games, and the ninth was Undercover Boss, which was broadcast immediately after the Super Bowl. So,
my guests are Mark Mravich and Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Mark, the New England Patriots offensive lineman Matt Light recently said that the league was threatening to cancel players' health insurance. Could they do that?
Well, the players will get no benefits if there's a lockout. There will be no health insurance. There'll be no. They're already in this uncapped season that we've had here, the 2010 season. Also meant no contributions to the 401k plans. All the fringe benefits will be gone for the players.
The playoffs are underway. The Super Bowl in sight. Are the ongoing negotiations a distraction?
I think this issue has been looming over the NFL all season. I think there's fear among the fans that they're not going to have a season next year, and that and this, all this sort of doom and gloom talk has sort of cast a bit of a pall. On the other hand, as I said, the television ratings are through the roof, and maybe it's people, you know, getting a last chance to see football for a year.
Well, maybe football, but what about other sports? Haven't strikes and lockouts turned off the fans in the past? It took years for baseball to regain full popularity, if it has. Hockey, I don't think, has ever recovered fully.
Well, baseball, it was interesting. You know, you could – some people have drawn a line between the 1994 season where the World Series was canceled and the surprising boom in home run numbers that the league somehow manufactured this popularity to draw the fans back, and they actually succeeded in 1998 with McGuire and Sosa going for the home run record. You know, sort of drove
a mix of a faster ball and a lot of steroids.
That's exactly right, juiced ball and steroids, and turning the other way when these guys, you know, blew, you know, went up to 250 pounds. These muscle bound hitters.
So what would you do in football and basketball?
That's what the NFL do. They use a Nerf ball for next season, so you could throw 100-yard passes down the field. I mean, you know. I don't think the NBA has quite gotten that to that point where they've thought about how to regain their fans, but they're going to have to, because in the 1999 lockout, I remember I was working for the Celtics at that time, and I remember just seeing swaths of empty seats in that arena. I mean, fans definitely were turned off by it. I mean, I think they've come back. You talked about the NFL ratings. I mean, the NBA ratings aren't up as much as NFL, but they're up 2 or 3%. I mean, attendance is down a little bit this year.
Because of prices.
Because of prices and the lack of talent and some bad markets. I mean, New Orleans is a terrible market for the NBA. Memphis has not been a good market. Minnesota hasn't really been a great market. I mean,
and Cleveland now is hurting because they lost their biggest star.
Well, Cleveland's a great story, actually, because Cleveland still sells out because they made their fans, you know, buy season tickets back in March, you know, before LeBron left. So their slide hasn't exactly happened yet, but it's going to. You're right. They're going to, you know, wind up seeing, you know, half-empty, half-filled stadiums, and the NBA can't have that. I mean, it's just not going to be successful.
Are players active in supporting their cause? Or is this like most union negotiations, they split both ways?
I think they split both ways because, you know, it was LeBron who came out and said that there should be contraction. And the union,
must have really
the
union,
jumped,
his union
jumped all over him. You had the union president, Derek Fisher, went ballistic. I mean, Billy Hunter, the head of the union, went ballistic. I mean, you know, his sentiments actually were echoed by a few players. I mean, Kevin Love said something similar. A player from Minnesota, he said that, you know, maybe LeBron was right. So, I mean, there really hasn't been a line in the sand drawn by players where they're all on this one side of this and standing in solidarity.
So if a contract isn't signed, who winds up ending the season? Is it the players who go on strike, or is it the owners who lock them out?
Well, in the NFL, there are a number of scenarios. One is a lockout. One is that the owners would not lock the players out, but engage in negotiations and then declare that they're in an impasse and give their last and best offer, and then if the players don't agree to that, then it's a lockout. The players could again decertify. So there's a lot of different scenarios. It might come down to the players making the call. It might come down to the owners making the call. It could, you know, it could go down to a lockout that, you know, they might wait till September to lock the players out. Nobody really knows what's going to be happening in the NFL for
yeah,
the next
the
9 months.
Yeah, the NBA, it's pretty much going to be the owners. I mean, come July 1st, after the NBA draft, they are going to, you know, probably present their last and final offer and say, this is it, take it or leave it, and then come July 1st, it'll be over.
Well, if they lock players out, aren't they still committed to paying the players? Because they're the reason the players who've signed contracts, legal contracts, are not playing.
Well, wouldn't have to pay the players in a lockout, no. I mean, they would be free from that responsibility until the games start up again, you know, whenever that would be. I mean, the 1999 lockout went from July 1st to about mid-January. You know, a lot of people that I've talked to expect this lockout to last even longer. There are a lot of people that I said that, as I said in the beginning, I think the owners are going for the jugular here. And I think that if there is a lockout, there's a very good chance that the entire season is lost.
And in the NFL, you know, players don't receive checks in the offseason. So they only get game checks or weekly checks during the season. So there's no obligation. There will be no – what you'll miss in the NFL is there'll be no mini camps. There'll be a draft, but players won't be allowed to sign with the team that drafts them. There'll be no training camp. But then come September, when the players are expecting their paychecks, that's when the things will come to an end.
Yeah, it's the same thing in the NBA. I mean, there'll be no summer league in July, no free agency where guys are free to sign with anybody. And Mark's right, in the NBA, the same thing. You know, November 15th is generally when the first paychecks are issued. So the players won't see a actual loss until that point, which is why anything that happens between July and then is really irrelevant, because the players are not going to, you know, feel the impact of this lockout until that mid-November date.
I understand why the professional basketball is suffering, but you've said that the NFL is rolling in dough. So what's the problem here?
Well, this is where
they're, and now they're talking about lengthening the season to 18 games.
This is where the you know, this is what is confusing to fans and to, honestly, to journalists. The NFL is thriving. They haven't opened, one team opened its books, the Green Bay Packers, and showed a $9 million profit that was down a little bit from the previous year. But
that's the smallest market in America.
Exactly. What's really at stake is there was a spate of stadium building, and a lot of those stadiums were debt financed. So what the owners want to do is they take $1 billion right now out of the total revenues before they split the money with the players. What they want to do is take another $1 billion. So from the $9 billion that they made this year, $8 billion would go into the player pool. In 2011, if they make $10 billion. They would take $2 billion out of that, and that is the real issue. The players don't want to split that money up.
Well, the players have only limited careers open to them. Very few last into their 30s, and only a rare few into their 40s. They often are injured and spend the rest of their lives with bad knees and bad backs and all sorts of other problems. The players do have some kind of argument here, don't they?
Well, I think
the owners wind up with a stadium that they can keep playing games in for 20, 30, 40 years.
That's exactly right. And the issue in the NFL, especially, of these older players who are suffering the effects of their careers, that's one that the fans, I think, actually sort of connect with. Of all the arguments on one side or the other, the owners are billionaires. The players are millionaires. Fans don't relate to that. But when they see one of their heroes limping, you know, or demented.
Having a concussion ends a career.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, that is one point where I think the owners and the players would come together with some sort of a fund for older players.
And, you know, it's much more of a problem in the NFL. I mean, you know, Mark said in the beginning that, you know, in the NFL, if your player is injured or not performing like he used to at age 29, they'll just cut you. I mean, they'll just, no matter what your contract says, they're going to, you know, they're not guaranteed. They can waive you and say goodbye. The NBA, at least right now, they have the protection of everything being guaranteed. So guys usually sign their second contracts at age 28, 29, and those contracts are almost always, for the good players, for 5 or 6 years. So they are guaranteed, you know, $80 to $100 million. And the NBA is not happy with that. And that's, they want... We were talking about this in the car ride over here. Like, the NBA would happily trade their system for what the NFL has right now. I mean, they'd be glad to take the system the NFL is running under.
We have no more time left, but I hate predictions. But what are your thoughts? Are we going to see lockouts?
I think there will be a lockout, and I think it will extend through. This is just speculation. I think it'll extend through sort of August. You know, training camps will be canceled, and then sometime around September, when the season is approaching, there'll be some serious negotiation. They could settle everything right now if they really wanted to.
Players might even like that. They hate the preseason.
They hate the preseason, and you'd be talking about maybe 1 week of preseason, and then real games would start.
I think the NBA will have a lockout. I think it'll go even longer than the NFL's. I think we're talking at the earliest mid-January with games starting in February. But remember, if they go into February and they haven't reached an agreement, they'll wipe away the whole season. But I think it's going to go at least till mid-January.
Chris Mannix and Mark Mravick of Sports Illustrated, thank you so much for being with us.
Sure.
My pleasure.